Good morning and welcome to the October 2021 ADM Farm Direct Fertilizer Report. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune times. I'm your host, Zach Jans, and today we have Jordan Berry from ADM Processing. He will give a grain update, and we also have BK Morris, who will enlighten us on the fertilizer market. Jordan, why don't we kick off with you, as there's been some USDA reports and different things going on the grain side.
Thanks for having me on the call again this month. I know it's been a few months since I've been on here. Yeah, as everybody is aware right now, the main focus is just harvest progress, harvest activity, and certainly a lot of discussion of what's going to happen next year in regards to corn versus bean plantings, you know, more based on the fertilizer prices, which Zach and his team will continue to go more in depth there. You know, looking at last week's activity, obviously we had the USDA WASDE report that came out. You know, if I just look at the corn, we certainly continue to see more impressive yields, whether I look east to west, which the WASDE recognized they didn't take anything up dramatically. But again, we're still pretty much in the early stages. Those that did make more progress in certain territories than other, though, as we've stated, they were impressed on yields, just came in much better than anticipated, especially given the adverse weather conditions that all of you face in the last few months. In saying that, we do continue to feel like we'll see more changes, you know, in regards to yield in the coming reports, just based off we're going to have more data to utilize in regards to the Corn Belt. Switching over to beans in regards to the report, probably no shocker here. Everybody, I would think, whether you're a commercial, whether you're the farmer, the impressive nature of bean yields has been felt east to west. I think we're definitely making good progress, but just feels like how everybody prepared in regards to their space, you know, what to fill, they're now having to pencil in just bigger yields as we continue to wrap up the bean harvest, which is a good thing. So we'll kind of see what happens next month as we see any major changes, but it just feels like next month will definitely be more focused on the corn side versus beans. Still looking at the report, flipping back to corn, the main discussion is always the carryout number, given it's our real first yield indication. The corn side came in at 1.5 billion. That number, you know, from a world perspective, is okay at that quantity. The world knows they can come to the U.S. They're going to have, I wouldn't say ample stocks, but they're certainly going to have stocks to be able to go pull at probably a decent price from a U.S. origin. So more, that's probably the number you want to focus on as we look at the next reports, as we look at export demand pop up. Because a move in either direction will certainly make a jolt in regards to the Chicago futures price. Going back to beans, you know, our carryout, much different look than what we dealt with last year with what happened with Hurricane Ida, was obviously going to push back exports that were going to probably move more in Q4. Now you have the question mark of, will they move Q1, Q2, or will our big buyer in the world, specifically being China, will they continue to go utilize South America as best as they can? You know, I think the market's been unimpressed with recent export sales, specifically on beans. I think we felt like China was going to come off a holiday a couple weeks ago and come in and buy in style, but they just really haven't had to. Pipelines have felt good. They'll continue to stay in the spot buying market, and they'll also continue to peg U.S. versus the Brazil, whether they look at it at a FOB value or they look at the margin calc that they're getting CNF China, if they're going to go and make meal. So just another one to watch. You know, one thing you want to be very cautious of, as the market's been unimpressed on the China purchases off the P&W here the last few weeks, is the Chinese certainly can wait till the very last minute to go buy anything off the West Coast just because it's the quickest transit time. So I think that's probably the biggest thing we want to watch in regards to new export sales. But with the books already made for Q4, with the delay in Hurricane Ida, a lot of the market is still certainly focused on execution, whether it's the U.S. Gulf or the P&W. So flipping to domestic use, whether it's on the corn or the bean side, margin structures and demand in regards to both processing groups, it certainly feels better than probably how we felt 12 months ago. If I look at corn first, Q4, Q1, in regards to margin structure, ethanol, still feel much better than they have in years prior, but with more people on the road. So continue to watch out for what your local processing demand is. Continue to look for any kind of moves in the board, especially as you have to make a tough decision in a couple months to what are you going to plant in regards to fertilizer prices. from a bean standpoint, not a whole lot's changed the last 6 to 9 months. Still good demand, needs to stay competitive with a decent export program. You know, we continue to find more and more meal consumption. That's been a surprise in the market, but hasn't been a bad thing either. So again, you know, continue to watch out for your local markets as premiums move up and as flat price makes sense in regards to your own portfolio. So with that, Jance, I don't have a whole lot more on the grain side. Feel free to ask any questions or answer them at the end of the call.
Yeah, definitely. I do have one question that we'll get to after the call. But right now, we'll start into BK Morris. I don't know, BK, if you're on, if you want to take yourself off of mute and give us a little bit of a fertilizer update.
Excellent. I'll focus mostly on the global side and touch on anything else as asked. The main picture we're looking at starts with urea, as always. Basically, the U.S. is still trailing the world substantially on the price we're paying for urea, so we're not going to see a huge surge in arrivals in the near term. Just to put it in perspective on dollars and cents, our high price recently has been still trailing what the Middle East can get from most other markets around the world by about $100 or almost $100 on a metric ton basis. So we're not a priority beyond the program cargoes that we typically receive from Saudi and Qatar. On the other hand, we're more competitive for much of the North African tons because a higher freight cost to get to India, which of course is the big market pulling in most of the world's urea. Having said that, in terms of where it's still best to go, the fact is Brazil is paying about $25 more per metric ton than we are for urea at this point. They will probably stay ahead of the U.S. for the next month or two at least. This, again, is not unusual. This is not a sign that something is massively wrong with the marketplace. The main issue remains India and its needs. Here's one of the problems with the urea market globally. The Indian buying this year, usually you see one or two really huge purchases by India, you know, not just a million, but sometimes up to 2 million tons, where they basically come in, take out all the stocks. Obviously, that leads to a price increase when things like that happen. But it also means they have some flexibility about when they come back into the market. So if they don't like the price, they can stay out for a month. Sometimes too. That's not in the cards right now. They've just bought not quite 750,000 tons. We expect to see another tender from them by the end of next week. The expectations are they'll buy another 500,000 to 750,000 tons. We do not see this as some new strategy by them. We just think, frankly, they have not been able to get their ducks in a row about what they want to do. The government is naturally not real happy with the price of urea out there. And their original strategy clearly was to try and limit their purchases in hopes that would do something to help build global stocks. That hasn't happened because given the food prices around the world, everybody is eager to grow more food and they are buying more urea. So I'm not trying to blame India for everything, but their strategy hasn't worked. It hasn't paid off for them. And that's part of the reason we're going to continue to see strong urea prices on a global basis, certainly through Q1, and it could easily last until Q2 on a global basis. The other big weight in the marketplace is China is really going to detailed lengths to limit the exports of fertilizer of all kinds. It's primarily affecting, of course, urea and to some extent phosphates. Why is this? Part of the issue in China is that they are facing an energy crunch like much of the rest of the world right now. And they are concerned that they could find themselves having to choose between producing fertilizer and other products or maintaining support for the population, transportation, heat, things like that. So they are being extremely cautious in case they lose production due to energy issues. And so right now, they're saying publicly that these restrictions on exports, and they are very tight restrictions that are going into place right now, could last until June. On the urea side of things, we have some questions about that because their domestic storage would probably put a lot of pressure on them to continue to perhaps boost their exports. And obviously, you're all aware that we don't get Chinese urea in the U.S., but the fact is it's limiting the world supply, and that's keeping the price up. What do we expect in prices? The basis, NOLA? We do expect the typical reduction in the U.S. marketplace during Q4. It's hard to stop that. Yes, the arrivals at the ports are going to be down, but now that we're entering the season when the river begins to close up north, amount of the U.S. market that's available is also reduced. So right now, sure, we may see some lower urea prices, but come Q1, which is when it really starts to count, it's going to be a tough haul. And frankly, it's as high as prices have reached now. You shouldn't rule out the idea that global prices will force NOLA to move up even beyond the peak we got to. I'll move on a little bit to ammonia. The story there obviously is all about Ida, but it's also about some of the delayed turnarounds and some of the difficulty coming out of the turnarounds. The prices, and I don't need to tell you, in the Midwest are over $1,000. The good news is that the U.S. is producing and probably has access to enough ammonia to get through the year, but the fall season is not looking particularly well supplied. That's anecdotal reporting. We don't have data really from the U.S. producers to support that, but what I'm being told is that people aren't as full as they were. And this is a real blow because, you know, we've had this great harvest progress because we were able to get it sort of an early start on it. And a lot of people were hoping to get started on ammonia use and perhaps increase their ammonia use. And that could be a little bit tougher and certainly a lot more expensive than we thought just a month or two ago. In terms of, are we going to attract more imports with these high prices? The answer is not that much. The Europeans are buying up as much as they can. However, that does not mean they're going to probably be taking too much supply away from the U.S. A lot of the European shutdowns, which are a very real thing, are affecting a lot of the inland plants. They've got a lot of older, smaller operations that have had to shut down due to cost. The problem is they can't really replace that lost ammonia production with imports. The infrastructure to get it from the coast to some of these inland locations simply isn't there. And that means they will actually be turning to dry nitrates, primarily CAN, to meet their nitrogen needs that may not be met by ammonia. So right now we see enough supply in terms of how much can come through the U.S. supply chain and get to the interior. But the U.S. is tight right now, primarily Hurricane Ida. And not only the number of turnarounds we had due to decisions to delay those over the previous summer and for much of last year and this year. So I don't have any news to provide you with. Anticipate lower ammonia costs in the near term. Potash, that's, of course, a bigger story now than it usually is, which is always a bad sign. You don't want to have big news in potash because it's almost always bad. The good news there is that imports were almost 1 million tons. January, August, these are calendar year figures. January, August imports were almost 14%. We've had additional supplies of potash come in from Israel. They jumped from 75,000 tons for the first 8 months of the year. They jumped all the way up to almost 380,000 tons metric. Imports from Germany are up. Imports from Jordan are up. Have we covered the effect of losing the Belarus product? Not yet, but we're making a pretty good start. So I won't tell you we're going to be long, but I will tell you that it looks like from multiple sources, we may be able to balance out the marketplace. And assuming the Belarus product moves to some other markets that it hadn't gone to previously, the impact of this looks like it could start working itself out as they compete for other overseas markets. Some of that product that might have gone there from other suppliers certainly would be welcome in the U.S. On the UAN, just an amazing situation we're facing. You know, we only have the import-export data for the current market year for a couple of months. So good news, it was up modestly. The exports were down modestly. It doesn't really mean a thing. What matters is the prices you've seen at NOLA, the prices you're starting to see in the interior. I don't have anything to tell you that's going to be reduced. I get calls almost every day from people saying, so where can I find UAN? And it's not because these importers don't know their marketplace, they do, but they're scrambling for individual cargoes. They know they're not going to find new sources that will give them another 100,000 or another 200,000 tons right away. But the amount of additional UAN that we'll be able to get here, because we already dominate the global market to a great extent, is going to be pretty modest. The good news is, as we expected and as we pointed out a couple of months ago, Eurochem continues to come here. They're just going to wait and see how it works out. And they're looking at the prices that they can get here. And even if we assume a negative result, meaning in this case that CF's petition succeeds and some sort of sanctions are put on UAN imports from Russia and from Trinidad, the prices are so high, it's not going to stop a lot of those imports from coming here. There isn't that much additional UAN demand globally that all of that UAN can really go anywhere else. And much of the production that we're talking about doesn't have the option of just converting it all to some sort of dry product that they can sell elsewhere, even though they'd probably love to be able to boost their dry nitrate production right about now. So good news is right now there's no product where we see a long-term shortfall in the U.S. The bad news is I can't give you anything now that's going to point to lower prices for anything. And the main exception to all of this, or the main sort of thing to remember, I would say, is MAP remains a scarce bird. If you see one, shoot it, bring it home. There simply isn't much more that can come here. The U.S. importers have done fairly well to bring in what they can. As I think I mentioned, the MAP imports were up July, August, but we're talking very small volumes. That availability simply isn't there. And we're starting to see some really questionable offers also, I might add, out of NOLA. There was a NOLA barge offered at over $770 this week. Nobody bought it. Well, I'll be blunt, I actually thought somebody would, and maybe they will. But that's a prize, obviously, that's not workable through the marketplace right now. But that's somebody betting that there's somebody desperate enough to meet an obligation that they'll pay that much. As usual, I've jumped around a little bit too much. I'll stay on the call if anybody wants to shout at me or complain or ask a question. Thank you very much.
Thanks, BK. Appreciate the update as it relates to the global market. I tell you what, we're going to have Jake step in here just for a little bit and kind of give an update on what he thinks the U.S. market's going to do and honestly really try to rein in all this information. BK, it was phenomenal information regarding urea, regarding potash, regarding UAN and phosphates and ammonia. We appreciate that greatly. Jake, if you want to hop on and see if we can talk a little bit about what's going on in the U.S., that'd be great.
From our perspective, I can't really disagree with anything BK has framed up here. I do want to dispel a rumor, though, that seems to be getting more and more prevalent in the marketplace, that you will not be able to get product in the springtime. And I think that is absolutely false. I think there would have to be a lot more production downtime before that happens. What I do believe will occur is there are going to be markets that are traditionally ammonia and UAN markets that are going to struggle to get the amount of UAN that they normally would, and therefore they'll have to turn to urea. But globally, the nitrogen equation still is balanced to slightly long. And provided that eventually the U.S. price gets over the world values and we incent some additional imports to come here, we should have a balanced spring for nitrogen availability. Now, a lot of things could happen to disrupt that, but I think that there's a very prevalent rumor in the marketplace right now that I just wanted to address head on and say that we don't necessarily prescribe to that. Do we think it's tight? Yes. Do we think that you're going to not be able to get your fertilizer? No, I don't see that the issue. Barring crazy logistic issues, which we continue to deal with year over year, we expect a somewhat normally supplied spring. Is it going to be tight on MAP? Yes, it will be tight on MAP. Could it be tight on UAN? Yep, it's going to be tight on UAN, but there should be urea here to fill in the gaps. So with that being said, I think that kind of frames up the nitrogen complex and what we've got to do. BK addressed that we're discounted to the world price. We're going to have to, at some point in time, take our nitrogen price above the world market price. Now, globally, we have a few markets that are still very active. Normally in December, January, it gets pretty quiet. So the question is, do global markets come off during that period, or does the U.S. rally during that period to start getting the import volumes that it needs? And given the fact that the bet skews $100 of upside and the energy markets are supporting little downside, it's our belief that generally urea prices are going to start working towards the upside. Now, is that a signal that you guys need to run out there and start buying your spring needs? That one's a tough one because the economics aren't great. And so I think that our recommendation still, which is somewhat unclear, is if there is margin in booking your forward fertilizer, then you should do so. If there is not, then we would encourage you to work with suppliers, us, whomever, to make sure they have supply for you and then figure out a way to defer the pricing just because of the volatility that's here in the marketplace. Are we expecting downside? No, we're not. But at the same token, we're dealing with $700-$800 urea now. And so we got to treat that decision very seriously. So that's kind of the frame up for the nitrogen complex. Expect further price upside on all these products. I will say this, in November, when the ITC and DOC decide whether there should be a preliminary duty levied against the import UAN, we'll have a clearer picture on what the supply may or may not do to react during the winter months, and then have a little bit better understanding about what UAN may or may not be available. The one thing we've got to keep in the back of our mind, and why I say UAN is going to be tight, there has been a lot of U.S. domestic production that has just been lost due to the turnarounds and extended turnarounds and some unplanned downtime. There's not as much UAN as that would normally be here in the marketplace. That's why we do believe that product is going to be tight for this coming spring season. On ammonia, you just can't get more through the system. So kind of a wrap there on nitrogen products for the moment. Phosphate, we don't see international weakness. We don't see a lot of international volatility driving up either. In the old adage of you have to feed a bull and starve a bear, So really what we're seeing is flat markets, though, because of the tightness in supply, because of the downtime that's there, because of the producer sales books that are going out further than where they've been before, we don't see weakness in the market. Usually this time of year, you'd start to feel it, and we're not showing those signs. In fact, we've seen the Indian market react with some increase in subsidies to help make it more profitable to be an importer of those fertilizer products. Now, still doesn't quite support the world levels we're at today, but bottom line is governments are trying to do what they can to ensure that they have fertilizer in these other markets that we compete against for the commodities. So again, to BK's point, we're seeing MAP be really tight globally and MAP trading a premium into the Brazilian market versus what the US market is paying for. And the market should continue to try and find balance internationally. And so we expect those prices to continue to move up on MAP. And we think that the world market's going to have to do some work, but we think DAP is going to be one of those that continues to close the gap and move up closer to MAP in its pricing. So DAP with a spread right now of somewhere between $50 to $80 a ton, that appears to be the better buy for the coming spring. End of the day, we think markets will correct themselves, that gap will close up and we'll have a closer spread between MAP and DAP. Recommendation on phosphates are that you have time to buy it. We don't see a lot of upside, but we don't see a lot of downside either. That's kind of where our recommendation is on that right now. Potash front, very similar to what BK said. We don't see downside on potash. We do see supply balancing itself out and getting a little bit more availability come the spring. But given the fact that we're trading discount to the global market, we think that the producers will continue to try and drive price up as we get into the springtime of next year. We're discounted to Brazil by about $60 to $80 a ton, depending on what you would consider last traded. So that's kind of a wrap for where we're at on the market there. One thing that I do think that's important to note is on sulfate. It's been the sleeper and it continues to go up in pricing. Sulfate's had similar downtime issues. It's got the high price of ammonia as a feedstock into it. Sulfur globally is more tight because you have all the phosphate plants trying to purchase sulfur to continue running. So the two main feedstocks are up in pricing and the margin structure has been tighter for the sulfate producers. Also, when you look at some of the N per unit and give a value of S to the ammonium sulfate, some of the cheapest ammonia or nitrogen out there has been in the form of sulfate. So we would recommend you consider locking in some of your sulfate needs. We think that product still has additional upside and it has a tight supply availability as well. So that's it for the fertilizer market, Zach. I'll turn it back over to you and stay on the line for more questions.
I appreciate that, Jake. I mean, nature of the beast is we're just in a market that's high and try to make the best decision possible to lock in the biggest margin you can. Jordan, I had a text message question sent to me regarding grain, and they wanted to have an idea on what your feel on basis is going into the end of the year and then obviously going into next spring and summer, specifically more on the corn side than the bean side, but I think it'd be great to touch on both.
Yeah, sure. I'll just give a very unbiased opinion. You know, obviously, if we just look at the bean sector, you know, we're at pretty high basis levels today as we're in Q4. You know, you're seeing a lot of execution, whether it's going to the PNW that hasn't had many issues. You're looking at the river segment that is kind of just getting started back up. You had a lot of rain in the east. So you saw basis values the last couple weeks over there firm up, and now they've calmed down a little bit. Overall, I really struggle to see basis values completely fall out of bed here. You still have decent demand, whether it's export, whether it's from your local domestic market. As you look at Q1, we certainly had a lot of space to start this harvest. We've yet to have a space constraint. When you flip the calendar year over, it's really in the farmer's hands of, hey, I see some high-priced fertilizer. What am I going to plant? Do I need cash? You know, that's probably going to be the big move as what happens for Q1, Q2. Still sticking with beans. We've had some pretty decent carries in the board. You've had some pretty big carries in your cash markets. It feels like those have really started to tighten up, which says, hey, got to have decent basis values here for Q4. But necessarily doesn't mean you've got to have a super strong, you know, Q1, Q2 basis levels given where they are today. But again, demand can change dramatically, whether that's domestic or whether that's export. In regards to the corn segment, Q4, as I stated at the beginning of the call, we are in a little bit of a better margin environment. It still feels like there's more execution on the beans versus corn. So it's really all about what's your local processor market, you know, how their ownership is. And that's a really tough one today, given we still have quite a bit of harvest to go through. As you transition from Q4 to Q1 and even Q2 in 2022 on corn, that's when we really see the ramp up in regards to corn exports, whether that's the PNW, whether that's coming out of the U.S. Gulf or any other export corridors. So they don't have a crystal ball out there, but that's kind of where I'd feel today.
Appreciate that, Jordan. Again, if anybody does have any questions, feel free to unmute your line.
Do you guys think we'll see a shift in corn soybeans because of the high nitrogen prices?
Ron, that's a heck of a question. That's one that we've been battling, I guess, for a while. But I'm going to have Jake step in here and talk a little bit, and then probably Jordan talk a little bit on that, just to give kind of a rough idea on both sides of that market, Ron, if that's all right.
Ron, thanks for the question. Here's my opinion on it. Fertilizer is the tail, and the bean and corn market is the dog. Very rarely should the tail be wagging the dog. So what I believe is that we've had some tightness for these third quarter, fourth quarter periods, and we're trying to get some markets globally to defer their buying. That is happening because of the run-up in pricing. If there's going to be continued high prices in nitrogen, then one would have to argue that corn's going to have to make a move or beans going to have to make a move. But again, I hate saying that because fertilizer really is a derivative of what the corn market and the bean market's going to do. So I look at it as what Jordan has kind of said, what he thinks going forward on pricing and prices, and then people trying to determine if there's economics in the current value. If not, then one could make the argument price has to come off. But I want to hear what Jordan has to say and kind of that forward look on grain.
I'm a big S&D fan. That's kind of what I, you know, really start and really finish any of my personal opinion and how I voice it internally, externally. If I look at the pure S&D and I look at the forward curve, and let's just talk corn. You know, I think I've stated it a couple times on this call that from a world perspective, a 1.5 billion bushel carryout gets recognized. It's not ample. I wouldn't say it's too much. Is it too little? It's just saying, hey, we know we can go to the U.S. So in regards to that, I lean that we will be surprised on the upside of more corn going into the ground than what we would probably run on the economics today. Again, a lot of that's going to change. We're going to see the yield in the next USDA report change. We're going to see the demand structure change. We're going to see how the U.S. domestic markets in regards to processing, how that changes and how volatile that is. That could certainly swing it, you know, one way or the other. But if I look at the bean S&D and I look at a 300-plus carryout versus last year, you know, we got down in the markets in the low 100s, if not lower than that in certain wires. The bean carryout feels a little bit better, where, you know, maybe we continue to sustain a bean rally here to finish out the year. Does corn make a move? That's pure speculation, pure volatility. So that's really what we're looking at. But from a pure S&D is what I want to always hone my value or my opinion in. I think you will be surprised in the number of corn acres, even given the fertilizer prices, even given what we see on economics today. I think it'll be very similar to last year. We'll get into January and a lot of tough decisions are going to have to be made, you know, within a 30-day window as we roll the calendar year over.
I was just going to say that if the UAN is going to be tight and expensive, is there a state? I know Iowa has a couple of plants that are down, Western Iowa maybe more so than anything else. Is there going to be issues in Nebraska and Western Iowa with just availability in certain locations?
Good question again. I'll speak a little bit more specifically. CF Industries in Fort Neill, Iowa, and N7 in Weaver, Iowa, they both had a turnaround last summer, which that was planned, but the time in which it took to come up was unplanned. They all probably had an additional lost runtime of anywhere from 15 days to 45 days, depending on the plant. That's a lot of UAN that normally would go into the market for storage and be available. Now, keep in mind, those two plants don't just serve that local market. They go all the way over to the West Coast. And so it's hard to say that your specific market's going to run tight. But what I am comfortable in saying is the predominant form of nitrogen application in Iowa, Illinois, Indiana is going to be ammonia and UAN. Those two products, knowing that we're tight across the whole U.S. and you're competing with the whole U.S. for those products, likely there's going to be less there in that market than what there historically would be. And likely then you're going to have to balance your nitrogen equation with urea to the point which you can. So that's the assumptions we're making today. We'll have a better feel for it as we get into Feb, March, how much is in that local market or in which local markets are shorter UAN versus others. Right now, I think that the market consensus, and BK, maybe you have a feeling on this, is that the East Coast is probably one of the driest markets as far as UAN availability. But that's kind of where we sit today and what we know. Your original question, Ron, the fertilizer grain complex, like Jordan said, there's a lot of hard decisions yet to be made in January and February timeframe. And a lot of that has to do with how balanced we are on nitrogen, what the total acre call for next year will be. And that we're trying to solve for right now over the next couple months. And it's hard to say which way fertilizer prices will go.
So did you say that urea was in the $800, or I just didn't hear you right?
800 into the interior markets, getting very close. So on a NOLA basis, we're trading 715, 725. If you were up in the North Dakota market right now, you could be seeing close to $800 urea. Along the riverside, you could be seeing mid $700 urea right now.
So that's our nitrogen in Iowa would be in the 50-cent range for the anhydrous. You're talking about 86 cents for urea?
If you bought ammonia early, yes, you're talking like that. But if you go try to buy ammonia today, those spreads are a lot narrower than you think they are. I ran through this economics with a grower yesterday, and we're only 7 to 8 cents apart today versus if you bought ammonia back in August, September, we'll say, and it had a 7 or an 8 in front of it. That's significantly different spreads on that cost per unit of N for sure.
Well, the current FOB price on ammonia today, if you were to buy spot in season pull, is $1,200 plus. So you're talking 73 cents of N versus 81, 82 cents of N. What it is for fill is still yet to be determined, but it's likely not going to move down massively.
Well, $1,200 is really expensive.
It's very expensive. That's why you're not hearing me bang the drum saying you need to buy, because these are very hard decisions.
Well, some of our Iowa guys, because the corn on corn didn't yield very well, are probably going to pull the plug on the corn on corn. And we're probably seeing some shift from corn to beans for next year.
Thanks for that update, Ron. Appreciate it. Anybody else have any questions?
Yeah, I have a question considering urea. If we do have an opportunity to get some booked, I'm trying to understand what the downside potential of that is versus knowing that we might have some. How much downside do you guys think is there?
Yeah, so to make sure I understand your question, caller, I appreciate the question. You're looking for what's your downside risk if you buy urea at whatever level versus upside risk. If you're worried about not getting it, just to make sure I understand it.
Yes.
Jake, if you want to tackle that, I think the biggest thing is if you look at a margin structure from your balance sheet and say, okay, I can own 25, 30, 50% of my urea at X, and that looks okay today on my corn acres, then I suppose you probably should think about doing that. But Jake, go ahead, and if you want to chime in here.
So I'm going to give you as much color as I can. I'm very cautious to make forward-looking statements right now because it's the kind of stuff we get sued over. But I'm trying to give you guys as much information to make the best decision you can today. I last night booked a cargo that would arrive here into the United States at $700 a short ton NOLA for first quarter arrival, right? So that puts the urea into the interior probably about anywhere from $55 to $85, depending on where we're going, close to $800 a ton. We did that because we saw profit and we hedged it off. I would not have done that just outright on a pure speculative bet, because the way I look at it, the downside on urea is what is the cost of production, which is the natural gas derivative. Here in the United States, there's a lot of profit for these producers to make money on. But globally, on the market we're competing on, and knowing we have to go into the global market for urea, we start to look at these cost curves, and that's where Europe becomes a talking point for us. Europe is kind of that supply point that's marginal right now because of their cost of natural gas. And I'll admit right now, maybe BK, you have some ideas on this. What is the natural gas complex looking like in Europe right now? I've not paid attention to it the last couple of days.
Starting last week, the price did come off, or actually even 2 weeks ago, the price was starting to come off a little bit. But the problem is the $4 or $5 shift downward sounds like a lot, except when your price is $40 in MMBTU. So they are a long way away from getting some of that end production back online. It is the bottom line. Now, you know, we've all read about what happened in England. It was mostly an issue of getting their CO2 capacity back more than it was ammonia production. But right now, you're a lot better off being a U.S. nitrogen producer than just about anybody in the world outside of the Middle East.
Yeah. And so you've got these European plants that are struggling to produce and they're shutting down. So they're buying a little bit more international urea as well. So we've got competition for it that normally we wouldn't have. So the downside on nitrogen is probably equally as the upside. But from the perspective you lay in is I'm worried about having something versus nothing. I think what you have to look at is if you step in and bought urea today, does it pencil for you? And if so, yeah, I would recommend getting some coverage for some of your initial planting if it pencils for you. If it doesn't, I would never recommend that. The other thing I would recommend too, and my whole team will crucify me for saying this, but it's just the reality. They won't crucify me, but you've got to check the other pricer too. Some people are still asleep at the wheel and they're charging way behind the market. There are better buys out there than what I would be offering today. And we want you guys to take advantage of that. And if you found somebody offering you $600 urea, that's a buy. Don't let them off the phone and get it bought. If you don't want it, call us. We'll take it. It's just right now the markets are going to be tight and they're probably going to remain tight through the fourth quarter. That's the difference between 07, 08, which I remember trading through. We could get product and supply almost anywhere. We're fighting for days to try and get these cargoes bought. So I don't think I answered your question clearly. I'm going to work on where that natural gas cost is for Europe to give you a better idea on downside, but I am thinking about it as well. So thanks for the question. Hope I gave you some guidance though.
Anybody with any other questions? They're great so far. Appreciate all of them. Thank you.
So we've got a lot of our nitrogen books from the fall form of AMS, but looking at the spring or summer, we need to, come back with the other half. And we're planning on UAN. I mean, do you think there's going to be a drop? I know this is a long time away, but is it crazy to not book anything ahead of time and hope to come in June or July of next year and get a discount, or should I hedge it a little bit? That's kind of the question I had.
Normally, the market prices and the market structure would tell you, yes, there is some downside. The problem that I don't have a good answer for you today is, will we go up another $100, which is the discount we are to the world market, before we start working on that downside? I think that's the question still on everybody's mind. My gut tells me, yes, the market still has more upside and upside volatility. Plants don't run perfectly. Supply pipelines aren't perfect right now. There are plenty of issues and reasons to believe that supply availability will get tighter that could continue to drive the price up. So should you have some coverage? Yes. Do I see a big drop off when we get to the tail end of spring in between that top dress time frame? No. The tightness on the UAN front is right now driven by two factors. One, unplanned downtime in the U.S., decreased inventories. Two, international import product not coming to the United States because of the threat of countervailing duties. If the duty case fails for some reason, which I'm not a believer that it will, still we wouldn't know about that till the first or second week of March, which isn't a lot of time to bring in a lot of UAN and get it in position to the U.S. market. So I don't think you're going to see a massive drop off in between that May-June timeframe like we have seen in some of the years in the past.
Second part of that kind of though, you mentioned like if you could find urea for $600, what would be the dollar for UAN?
We've seen all sorts of values of UAN. Today, if you were to buy on the wholesale level, FOB, a Midwest plant, kind of that Weaver, Iowa, the CF terminal distribution point in the Illinois River, you're going to be talking $600 plus just on an offer to a wholesaler. So the retail market's going to go higher than that. And so you see values significantly below that, I think that's something you need to consider layering in.
Could you touch on covering either AMS or ATS for spring?
A little bit. I do believe that AMS is going to continue to move up in pricing. So we've seen it move up about $100 some odd a ton now since we started in kind of that June, July timeframe. A lot of that was first people thinking, well, urea is tight, let's buy more AMS. But the driving factors have been partly these plants aren't running as higher rates as what they have in the past. The other part has been that it's been very cheap ammonia, and that ammonia input cost has gone up and the sulfur cost has gone up. So now you're under the threat of not producing AMS if they don't get the per unit of N price up. Just like we walked through earlier with the Midwest examples, interior ammonia in the middle of the United States is at $1,200 a ton. You're having the import tons still very high, and that's driving the cost of production up. So the producers are at a point of either drive prices up or shut in. So I do think there is firmness in the sulfate market, which also translates into the ATS market. There's a few ATS plants that look at it more of a, as a byproduct to their crude oil processes, and they're going to make sure that they clear tons. But we're not oversupplied in that marketplace that I see any reason to think prices are going to come off anytime soon.
Yeah, on that ATS comment, I know that last year they got into a little bit of trouble when they oversold their position, and it got really, really, really tight in that ATS market. And so a lot of those producers, even though it is a byproduct, they're still staying very close to the vest as it relates to offering any pricing, whether it be for fall or even for spring for that matter. So, I mean, it's going to be a little bit tighter market than I think we were all once used to on the ATS market for sure. Thanks for the question. Appreciate it.
I just had a quick question looking forward. Spent a lot of time looking back and trying to explain how we got to where we are, but any thoughts looking forward into your crystal ball as to how long this situation might persist or how we navigate out of this in terms of the nitrogen market especially?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that we need to see the corn S&D gain some stocks where it gets a little bit of comfort again, which, Jordan, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but maybe you could come off mute and correct, but that's probably somewhere over 1.5 billion in carryout. Is that kind of an accurate number where we get a little comfortable again?
Yeah, I mean, from a corn perspective, that's where the world recognizes the U.S. has stocks. They don't have a ton. They don't have too little. When you drop below that 1.5 on corn, that's when I would say the world destination markets get fairly nervous, which then adds into extreme volatility in the board price.
So we need to see stocks end after the growing season. We need to see the forward S&D curves look like they'll stay above that range. If not, we're going to have a high call on corn acres, which ultimately means a lot of nitrogen. And so the question is, what does it look like as we head after the spring, after we get the planting acres in the ground, after all that's done, what does the forward curve look like? From overall global supply, inventories are extremely low. Like, everybody's got to realize we're all talking now $700-$800 nitrogen prices, and UAN's prices are high and ammonia prices are high. No one's going to sit on excess inventory. And because of the cost of money and the cost of capital, everybody's going to decrease the amount of supply they have on hand. That's a given. So I don't think we have this massive hoard of inventory going on anywhere. So once we have a good growing season, it'll take a little bit of time for prices to start coming off. So do we expect after the spring of this year some softening of pricing? Yes, I think that's natural to expect that, particularly in the nitrogen. And after we get through the planting season of 2022, I think you could see the same thing on phosphates and potash. Add in a little bit of unplanned downtime, that would counter my arguments, but that's what the curves look like today. When we look at some of the forward price curves from smarter companies than us that study the S&Ds, they're showing a little bit of backwardation as we get into that second half of 2022 as well. So that would be what our expectation would be, is maybe seeing $100 come off in nitrogen prices, maybe to $150 as we get into the next part of 2022, second half of 2022.
How about the natural gas side of the supply problem and that effect?
My point of view on that one would be purely conjecture. I feel comfortable talking fertilizer. It's a great question because it is the driver here. I'm not solid enough on the natural gas side to tell you which way that go. It is going to be a factor, and it's something that we are trying to understand, but just not good enough to make a call on that one, unfortunately. If I were, I'd probably be working for a crude oil company, I guess.
But that will be, it's obviously going to be a factor.
Yeah, major factor. If that stays firm and drives up, if Russia keeps the spigot turned low and keeps Europe high, that pushes a lot of our marginal supply up into the higher ranges, and it's going to keep a high nitrogen complex going. So definitely something we got to keep an eye on.
I was just trying to understand, looking forward as you seek equilibrium in your operation on rotation and acre balance, you know, is this a new paradigm? I know it's hard to say that, but have we grown, you know, as we move from relatively inexpensive nitrogen input costs to something different in how that might affect our acre balance, at least on your own operation? I was just curious, looking forward, if the tea leaves were suggesting that this is a more persistent type of price balance or not. I know those are hard things to say in the heat of the moment, but it has some potential to be that way, I believe.
You know, that's a great question. It's something we're struggling with too. I think that what you're asking is the same thing every big company in the global market's asking in different ways and different commodities. But we're sitting here saying, okay, is this new demand point for the globe real, or is this a restocking of some sort? And if it's a restocking, then there's an implied slowdown after the restocking. And nobody seems to have a solid opinion on that, which I'm getting to the point that maybe this new global demand level is real. And so therefore, you're right, is that arguing something fundamentally changing in the call for acres or the shift in the balance of the crops. I'm not smart enough to give you that answer. We have a lot smarter people at ADM thinking through that and looking at it, and it's tough for them to figure that out too right now.
Thank you.
All right, if there is no more, again, appreciate all of you, appreciate the business, and we'll talk to you again in November. Thank you.